Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, it's blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to The Chase Down, part of Almighty Baller Radio, part of Dash Radio. I'm Justin Rowan with my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Today we have a special guest from Sportsnet. We have Faisal Khamiza. How are you doing today, Faisal?
I'm doing excellent, thank you.
Well, we're really
doing good too, if you don't, I guess I don't count anymore.
Carter, we already...
We find a cool guest and then suddenly I'm chopped liver.
Well, sucks. That's... You should just be happy that I even introduced you, okay?
That's fair. I'll take it.
After you bailed out on the last episode, I'm going to give you a little bit of a hard time. But today we're here to preview the upcoming Raptors-Cavs series. I'm excited about it. These are two teams that, in my opinion, have the best rosters in the Eastern Conference. The question is going to be which version of these teams show up. We've seen over the past while both of these teams are capable of looking like a contender or looking like an eighth seed. So, Faisal, we'll start things off with you. How confident do you feel right now about this Raptors team?
Oh, it's so hard to get any read on them, isn't it? Because game by game, year by year in the playoffs, they really take you on this unbelievably anxious roller coaster ride. And even in a closeout game, you're never comfortable. So you're right. And it says, when you say rather, it depends on the version of the Raptors that shows up and it depends on the version of the Cavs that show up, but there's just no way to predict that at all. So I don't know how much confidence I have in a Raptors team to show up and maybe take advantage of a game one where Cleveland's been, you know, basically sleeping for 7 days or 8 days or whatever it was. And that would seem like an ideal game to go and take and win, but I'm not sure if this team has the ability to turn it on so quickly after that. I don't even know what that was against Milwaukee on Friday.
Well, it's like this beautiful performance, and then just all of a sudden, just everything is crumbling around you. But then, obviously, they pull out the win. I just don't understand how a team that is ostensibly as good as the Raptors can have such lows. Like... It's like it at their worst, like they just torture their fan base to the point where I feel bad just like watching everyone.
It's agonizing. Like Raptors Twitter goes through such a emotional whirlwind every single game because you don't know how to react. It one quarter they're the best team in franchise history. The next quarter nobody wants to talk about them or see them come back next year because of this. So it's so inconsistent. And obviously you can get away with that against Milwaukee a little bit, but there's no way you can get away with that against a Cleveland team that features LeBron James. Even for all their flaws and for all their downfalls, LeBron James is the difference maker no matter what. There's nobody on the level of him, so you can't have those lulls in a game that features LeBron because I think by himself he's capable of just putting you to bed.
Yeah. For sure. Well, Kyle Lowry obviously has been one of those up-and-down guys, and He had another weird series, just like he does against everyone, against Toronto, or against Milwaukee. But the Cavaliers kind of actually don't have the same personnel to guard him.
No, not at all.
And the Raptors create one of the problems that the Cavaliers don't like to deal with, which is they don't leave anyone to hide Kyrie on, at least in their base starting lineup. Do you expect a big series from Lowry, given the fact that it's going to be mostly Kyrie sticking him?
Yeah, no, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, you put Malcolm Brogdon on a guy like Kyle Lowry, and you're not going to get a chance to put up a lot of shots. Lowry put up 11 shots a game against Milwaukee. That's unheard
that's
of
nuts.
For him.
That is so great.
I didn't know that's that. That's insane.
But a lot of it was a result of the defense around him. And again, Milwaukee... they thrive on their length and their arms and the taking away of space pretty quickly. And I don't think Cleveland has the same personnel to do that. I think Lowry can expose that a little bit more. I mean, we know he had a big series against them last year. You know, I think game four was when he went off for almost 40 on a pretty good shooting night as well. So, you know, he's just got to be that guy as well. Look, this team's going to go as far as Kyle Lowry. So if he doesn't have a good series, I think it'll be done quickly. The only way to extend it is for him to be good. I'm worried about the back a little bit. There's not too many times you see your star player get sent home for shoot around ahead of a crucial game because of an injury, but he says he's fine. He's always going to say he's fine, but we know he's playing a little bit banged up right now, and I wonder if he has to take on a bit of an increased load against Cleveland if that comes back to bite him at some point.
Yeah, it's tough because it always seems like everyone points to the playoff struggles of Kyle Lowry, but the struggles really seem to be with durability. Because you look year after year, it's either a hip injury, it's back, it's a knee, it's surgery on a shooting hand. Like, there's always these factors leading into the playoffs that kind of prevent you from seeing what a healthy Lowry would do. And I think last year we saw him get healthier throughout the Miami series. And then, as you mentioned, he had a very good series against the Cavs. I believe he averaged like 20 points per game on 47% shooting. So we've seen flashes of him being able to play in the playoffs. It's not like this is strictly mental, because, I mean, his best playoff series ever was in the conference finals. So it's not like we're talking about someone that just falls apart mentally.
Well, I'll just say that these sound like some millennial era excuses. I thought we were supposed to be better than that.
No.
No, I think you're right, Justin. I think you're right. I think it's definitely a combination. I mean, there is the factor of, with Lowry, he isn't big. He's not Steph or Kyrie, who's 6'2", 6'3". And I think the length and the increased intensity of the playoffs does throw him off his game in a way that, I do think you have got something with the injuries, but like, he also does have a harder time. I think even accounting for injuries, there is something to this, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think what the Cavs are probably going to do against Lowry is blitz him on the pick and roll. They're going to trap him. They're going to try to get the ball out of his hands and make other guys make decisions. So I think it's really in order to unlock Kyle Lowry, who I think we all agree is the X factor in this series, I think it's going to come down to whether or not the supporting cast is making the right decisions, because that's basically the only way the Cavs can make up for the deficiencies they have defensively.
And I think Toronto this year is more suited to have those other guys make decisions than in years past, certainly more than last year. And that's why you pick up a guy like Serge Ibaka and a guy like PJ Tucker, because they offer something that you just really didn't have in the past. So I don't think there's going to be like a lack of trust from Kyle to get rid of the ball and give it to someone else, because these guys have shown that they can do it, you know, and whereas last year, I don't know how much you trust Terrence Ross ever in your whole entire life, you know, but you can live with Serge Ibaka taking a three and missing versus, you know, Terrence Ross putting it up from 30 and hoping that it goes in. So you're right. The supporting cast is going to be huge, but it all hinges on Kyle's decision making.
You just mentioned Serge Ibaka, obviously their big midseason addition, and he does a lot for them against this Cavs team specifically, because Jonas has a really hard time surviving out there. Do you think Jonas has a role in this series?
I think he does. I still think he does. I know, you know, we've seen in the past that Tristan Thompson's kind of outplayed him at the rim, and we probably know that's the case, but if you're not relying on JV to start this series, and I'm of the belief that they shouldn't go back to that starting lineup with Jonas in it. Yeah, I feel like the versatility you get with Kyle, DeMar, I don't know if Norris. Yeah, I'm still wrapping my head around.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that. This was another thing we wanted to talk about, so we can fold this in. Like, but what is the best starting lineup against this team? I've been of the mind that you want to go Lowry, DeRozan, Tucker, Patterson and Ibaka.
Yeah, so I like, that's a very good closing five, and I don't know if Casey's confident enough to start them and just say, all right, bench, like, let's roll with almost nothing.
That is hard.
I don't know, you know, look, I think JV has a role to play whether he starts or not, but I guess he kind of has to start, man. I feel like he has to start, because Tristan is too big out there, and you can rely on your other guys to kind of guard the wings. But I don't think Damari should start. I think PJ Tucker should be in the starting lineup for this series. That's why you got him, to guard a guy like LeBron, or to make things really ugly for the rest of the team there. And I don't know if Damari has the foot speed or really the capabilities in him to do it.
Man,
I think we saw
from
I know it is really disappointing because he's just all around a good dude, and you can see that he tries, right. You know, and like he tries really, really hard to make up for what he can't do anymore. And he played a good game six against Milwaukee. He really did. And it was his start that really propelled Toronto to, you know, to get things going there before they didn't get things going there. But I just wonder if JV is there, and if he starts, how reluctant Casey is to pull him if things are not going well and you need to look at, because we know Dwayne Casey can be pretty stubborn. I don't know if you guys know that. He's yes. pretty stubborn in his lineup moves and his decision-making, although I give him a lot of credit for switching things up against Milwaukee. And I think he knows now more than ever that if something's not working, like there's no point in continuing to try this. You don't have that much time to do it. So just try to make a change. So now that I think about it and I'm talking about it out loud, I think there is a role mm-hmm. for JV to start. I just not sure how much he plays in the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah I think he really had, sorry to cut you off, Carter, but I think,
no, you're good.
I think the only solution really is for him to play better against the starters. Like he struggled against Thompson in the past, mm-hmm. as you said, but you really can't play him with the bench lineup because the Cavs bench is almost similar to what the Bucks bench does, where that they play smaller, they play fast. Yeah. You have LeBron with four shooters, and even if Jonas can take advantage of Channing Frye in the post, they're still going to probably double him in those situations and not let him get those touches. And you're still trading two for three on almost every possession. I think the only solution really is for him to play with the starters. The other factor is he is going to help them on the boards. The Cavs have a great rebounding front court when they're on the floor together in Thompson, Love, and LeBron. I don't think you necessarily want to go four wings with Ibaka, who isn't the strongest rebounder, in those situations.
No, you're right. I think you're right. I think that's why I think you need that size there, and you try to establish some JV early. And when Cleveland goes to the bench, I think you're more than confident in going to yours as well, and knowing you'll get good defense and some pretty solid offense as well.
Yeah, I think the thing that I think when people evaluate these series, especially before they start, is that there's no like magic elixir for Toronto. Like whatever decision they make is going to be a tough one. And the Cavs are going to have to make some 100%. Tough decisions that like mitigate the other team's strengths as best possible. Like take the least poisonous pill. And I think you actually said something really smart in just saying like JV just might have to play better.
Yeah.
Like, he just has to play well.
It might be as simple as that, right?
Yeah. Like it sounds, you know, you want to pretend like this is this like, you know, rigid chess match where everyone's going to play at the same level every game, but like Valanciunas, when he plays well, is really, really hard to stop and is really effective and useful. It's mm-hmm. too far and in between, you know, few and far in between on those games. So yeah, like to some extent, like you have to just play better.
And, like, right.
And if they can't survive those minutes, I don't know if there's a great solution.
Yeah, because for the season, he's shooting about 38% when Thompson's on the floor and about 33% when Love's on the floor. Like I anticipate Tristan Thompson guarding Ibaka because he has more mobility and Kevin Love onto Valanciunas. But that's not something that the Cavs have had to do in the past, right? The Raptors didn't have that power forward that was really a threat like Ibaka. So they were able to put Thompson on Valanciunas more. As you said, like Love's Valanciunas is just going to have to play better, and maybe having Kevin Love guard him is going to help get him going. But even if we're looking at the season stats, that's still a relatively small sample size and doesn't necessarily mean that Valanciunas can't be productive in the future.
I agree. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you got it.
No, I was literally just going to say I agree completely. I think there could be a productive JV, and even if it's not, you know, right away, I think there's some adjustments to be made to make sure that at least on one end of the floor, he's dominant depending on who's matched up against him. And he certainly has to take advantage of one side of the floor and do that pretty well if he's going to have a role to play in this series going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. you wonder how if the Raptors, because I thought they did a really nice job last year of just saying, okay, whoever Kyrie's guarding, whoever Kevin's guarding, we're running a quick pick and roll. Like, we're just going to attack those guys. And now there's less hiding spots on that Raptors offense.
Yeah, there really is.
So you know, before you could just stick Kevin Love on, you know, the least threatening pick and roll threat and say, all right, he's fine, done. But now, you know, you've got just a lot more useful guys. And I wonder if that will manifest itself, because the Cavaliers have 2, 3, 4 guys who can be exploited on the defensive end. Like, it kind of feels like Toronto has to score like 115 points a game in this series to compete.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not going to win these 92-88 games against Cleveland. You're not. I don't think you're going to do that. You can't rely on that either. Your offense needs to be on point and ready to go.
Yeah, this is going to be a high-scoring series. Like, it was a high-scoring series against the Pacers, and I think the Cavs still have a lot of things to work out. So with that, I anticipate this being an up-tempo, high-scoring series, which isn't necessarily the best case scenario for the Cavs. Even when they get out and run, they typically like playing at a slower pace. They might score in transition off of turnovers and off of stops, but they really do like control.
What are stops? I'm not familiar with that term.
Well, as I said, they don't get out and run often, and that's probably a big contributing factor to that.
Yeah, sorry. I'm pretty pleased with myself. I actually also think DeRozan's going to be a problem in this series. I think really improved his game, and I think Cavs fans are like a little quick to like write him off because of the shooting. And sure, Ty Lue loves ignoring a shooter and just saying, hey, you know, like we're just going to basically play 5-on-4 until you get the ball. And they did that with Lance Stephenson in round one. Obviously, DeRozan's a lot, higher caliber player than Lance. But I do think that he's the kind of guy that the Cavs have not been super disciplined in their schemes this year.
No, they haven't.
And you kill DeRozan, I feel, with discipline more than anything else. It's don't reach your hand in there. Rotate smartly and get back. Like, and J.R. Smith has not been particularly focused this year. Iman Shumpert has not been particularly focused this year, though he had a nice series against Indiana. I just feel like this guy, like DeRozan's going to be getting to the line 12, 13 times a game. And even if he's not incredibly efficient from the field, he has a real chance to kill the Cavs on that side of the ball.
And I think that helps slow the game down a little bit as well. I don't think Toronto wants to play a very up-tempo game with the Cavs. I think they'll get kind of run off a little bit, but DeRozan getting to the line and slowing things down and establishing some sets is a good way for Toronto to stay in it. And I think, again, you have to take advantage of the matchups. And I think there's some benefit to getting DeRozan the ball early and allowing the Cavs to kind of have to adjust. But I agree with you, and I think that he's going to have a big series. I think for most of that Milwaukee series, he was good. I think everyone's going to remember the 0-for-8 in game 3, and that game in itself should just be erased from the memory for everybody. But he was very good in the game 6, where most of the Raptors in the second half really weren't. So he's got to bring that consistency to this series. And I think, again, that's the biggest word with this Raptors team. It's just consistency, man, from player to player to quarter to the entirety of this team to the coaching staff. Like, everybody's got to be consistent in this game or in this series, because this team is too good to, you know, get blown out one game and try to adjust for another game, because they're going to be one step ahead of you as well. Ty Lue is pretty smart, and LeBron James is as good as they come, obviously. So you're not going to have as much time, or at least you're not going to have as much resources available to adjust, because I think Cleveland's going to be on top of that more so than Jason Kidd in Milwaukee.
Right.
Faisal, a quick question here. So, last year, obviously, Bismack Biyombo was a huge difference in this series. Killed them on the boards. Which player on the Raptors this year will do surprisingly well enough for the Cavaliers to send Dante Jones in to punch them in the balls?
Oh, that's great. I mean, hopefully Norm is like...
That's a good one.
Norm's got some swagger to him, too. He doesn't really care. I don't even know if he gauges the moment correctly sometimes, because he's trash talking the Bucks bench when Toronto blew a 25-point lead and he hit a 3. I'm like, all right, man, sometimes just hit your 3 and move on kind of thing. You know, it's okay. But Norm's a nice guy. He doesn't have any ill will, but sometimes he gets caught up in the moment. And I think, you know, Dante Jones, that's why he's there, right? Not for the T or the J. He's there to just muck it up with the Raptors. And he did that last year pretty effectively. And
literally comes in with it was like with 20 seconds within 20 seconds of him being on the floor.
Oh man, but I don't think the Raptors are, I don't think they're as soft as last year either. So if if PJ's on the bench and he sees Dante Jones going to swing at someone, he's taking a suspension, and he doesn't give a damn about it, man. He does not care at all.
No, I really think there's it's going to come down to either Norm or Tucker, I think. Like, it, the Cavs get very annoyed when someone tries hard, and that's, like, what PJ Tucker is literally made up of. And, like, it...
I'm going to change my... It's going to be PJ. It's going to be PJ, just based on him being in everybody's face and talking to them during timeouts and this and that. They might punch him during a TV timeout. We might come back and be like, what the hell just happened?
It's going to be like a semi-pro.
Hard, like on a... On a LeBron post up on PJ, he's going to just drop his shoulder and take the offensive foul.
It's going to be exactly like semi pro where they cut to the commercial and all of a sudden when you come back, everybody's bloodied.
That's awesome.
So, speaking of PJ, do you think that he's going to be able to do the kind of job that they need him to do on LeBron? And would you, I mean, you can't match his minutes because LeBron plays like 45 minutes a game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Do you pretty much sink his minutes as much as you can with him? And is he capable? Obviously, Giannis had a few really nice games, but he also had a few really tough games.
Agreed.
And also, I think part of the advantage Giannis had over PJ that LeBron doesn't is that Giannis is like 2 inches taller than LeBron with longer arms. So he's got more of a length advantage than LeBron does, but obviously LeBron's got the skill, the footwork, the being LeBron James.
Why don't you just try to make him tired? You know, that's why I think I'm a big advocate for PJ starting. Just tire him out early, make him work really hard to start and you know, get in his head a little bit more. Again, you're not going to slow down or stop LeBron James, but if you can impede his early success and get yourself a bit of a lead or at least keep yourself close in that game if you're the Raptors, I'm not sure why you don't try to do that. And I think this is the reason you got PJ Tucker. Ibaka was great. Ibaka was a sexy name. But PJ was going to be the ultimate difference maker because it comes down to his defense. He can obviously guard LeBron probably better than anybody else on this team. And that's not saying he can stop LeBron, but he can make things difficult for him. And he's also pretty good on the pick and roll and getting out to those long shooters that Cleveland has as well. He's pretty versatile, despite being a very thick guy. He's pretty good at getting out there as well. So this is why you got him. And I think, if you're not going to go and start PJ here, it's almost a waste of gotten him. He can't play like the 18, 19 minutes. He's got to start the game, in my opinion, and at least try to make things as hard as possible to start for Cleveland, get in their heads a little bit, and then you can roll with a different lineup to try to get yourself a bit of a lead. But sure. I'm so firmly of the belief that he should be starting in this series, and that's why I think it's not going to happen.
I wonder.
I've seen this too many times, man. I've seen this too many times.
Oh, no. I do wonder, the Pacers had some success in spot moments sticking Thaddeus Young on LeBron. And the Hawks have had some spot moments where Paul Millsap's done a good job on LeBron, these big bodies. And I wonder if Casey will try to steal some minutes, especially when he doesn't have Tucker out there, with Patterson guarding him, or even Ibaka in a certain circumstance.
And I think that's fine, too. Look, I think I'm still good as well. I think Patterson is not a bad defender. He's in fact a pretty good one as well. And again, look, no one's going out there with the intention of stop LeBron from scoring or making plays. No, man, just I think the goal with him is just to try to make things difficult, and much like Lowry, who's gonna have to pass off and rely on everyone else, just try to make someone else beat you. And we know Cleveland's capable of doing that with everybody else on the floor, but we know LeBron is more so capable of doing it by himself, and if he's got the positioning, he's going to be the one to score. So why not just put it in everyone else's hands and in their heads and kind of hope for the best in that capacity.
Yeah, I mean, teams have had success in the past having someone that can sort of stick with LeBron and slow him down to an extent and not doubling off the shooters and staying with those guys. That's what the Pacers did a great job of, and it really prevented J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver from being offensive factors in that series. And I think if P.J. Tucker can give that to the Cavs, you just kind of... You accept, okay, LeBron worked hard for his shots, but he still got his 30 points, but we locked everyone else down. We made things difficult. I think that's the best way to stop the Cavs. Like, obviously, if you double LeBron, you're going to stop his scoring. But the Cavs just have too many weapons, in my opinion, to really try to do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about when you do put the bigger guys on them, or even just these more stout guys like Tucker, is so they'll give him like 12 feet of room, which everyone does, and then to try to avoid sending help. But the difference is when you have Thaddeus Young or Paul Millsap or even like a Tupat here, like when he goes to get that head of steam, normally if you have like a guard guarding him, he just gets that head of steam, bumps them on the way to the hoop. They go flying and he gets a wide open or an easy finish at the rim. Whereas, you know, you would see it. He'd kind of put his shoulder down to go into Thad Young in that last series. And Thad Young's like, well, I'm 6'9". I'm big. Like, I'm not moving. So it's a little bit harder for him. And it forces them. It's kind of like it's like a trap that the teams can kind of run because LeBron sees a smaller power forward on him. He sees an isolation. He sees no help coming. So he's like, I'm just going to attack this guy in isolation. And it traditionally hasn't worked that well.
No, so, it really hasn't.
So when you start putting those guys in the pick and roll and making them guard the ball handler in the pick and roll, this is something I've hinged on a lot is like, you know, Tupat has never guarded a pick and roll guarding the ball handler. It's just not part of his job responsibility. So that will throw him off. But you can kind of get them into that honey trap and stall out the offense for a couple of possessions here and there. And sometimes in these games, that can be the difference.
Oh, for sure. My only concern, I guess, if you do start Tucker is then you have Tucker and DeRozan on the wings, and Tucker shot well in Toronto, but I still think he's going to get a little bit of Lance Stevenson treatment where they'll leave him wide open and force him to either make shots or make decisions with the ball. And if you're starting Tucker, DeRozan, and Valanciunas, and Serge Ibaka hasn't shot well recently, he's shooting below 30% from three since Lowry came back, that could make things a little easier for the Cavs defense to load up on Kyle Lowry and prevent him from getting going.
Man, I'm just like thinking of all these thoughts, and I keep coming back to, will it even matter against LeBron James? And I know that's not what you asked and what you said right now. And, like, we're going through all this logic to try to, you know, see if the Raptors can compete, and I just think it comes down to LeBron, man. Like, does it even matter? And I know you guys would be more familiar with his, you know, playoff acumen, and obviously we can watch it from the outside, but you guys are more invested. But does it matter? Does any of it matter?
I think it matters because of the attention level the Cavaliers have shown in the playoffs so far.
Yeah.
Justin can rattle off their first half, second half defensive ratings against the Pacers. I think it was like 120 in the first half, like 98 in the second half. So
yeah, I think it was like 125 in the first half, if I'm not mistaken.
Jeez. So it's all about, like, I like to talk about playoff matchups in terms of margin of error as opposed to just raw talent. Like, the Cavaliers obviously have an enormous margin of error against everyone because of LeBron, because of their shooting, because of Kyrie, because of their talent. But I do think that, you know, all of this talk is basically just to find out how to, you know, make that margin for error smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And also, it's the only way that you can really have an interesting discussion talking about the Cavs. You break down the matchups and stuff like that. But it's a thing I always find frustrating is you try to gauge exactly how a series is going to go. But the LeBron factor is just so massive. And it's tough because you look like even last year's finals, you're talking about the greatest regular season team of all time. And LeBron just does things that you wouldn't. You'd sound just like a fan if you were to say, oh, LeBron's going to do what he did before it actually happened. But then he just raises his game to a crazy level.
Like a fan.
and then he did it. And I think, you know what? I know there's a lot of talk about the Raptors and getting kind of quote-unquote screwed by having to play Cleveland in round two. I think this is the opportune time for them to play them because you guys mentioned there's still some things for Cleveland to work out. And I think if the Raptors are going to take advantage of them, they might as well do it now because I think you give Cleveland another series to try to sort those things out and they'll be rolling into the Eastern Conference Finals, right? And this might be the Raptors' most ideal time to play them despite it being the second round and despite whatever belief you have that these two teams are the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And they're the best teams roster-wise, but they're certainly not playing like two of the best teams in the league right now. So why not put them against each other and see what happens, LeBron or not?
Mm-hmm. Actually, they might be playing like the best two teams in the East, given
that's a good point.
Celtics and Wizards series win was. Oh my gosh, brutal. So obviously,
so whack. Yeah,
So obviously, you know, the Cavs are going to be favored in this series.
Yes.
And obviously Lowry is a free agent coming up.
Yes.
If the Cavs just make easy work of them, you know, win this game in four or five, a gentleman's sweep. Do you bring Lowry back?
I think you still bring Lowry back. I think there's something to be said about losing the second round of the playoffs versus not making it at all. And, you know, you make the playoffs and you never know what the hell can happen. But if you don't put yourself in a position to do that, you're never going to have those conversations. I think Lowry is so important to this team. He is the most important to this team. I think if you don't sign him, there's no point in investing money in Ibaka or Tucker or even Patterson or anybody else, because
you don't
have your engine, and maybe you have something in DeLon Wright, but I don't think you're willing to find that out when you have this small window to compete right now with the guys that you have. And this is their best roster in franchise history this year, and sweep or not, or lose or not, or get blown out or not, I think you owe it to yourselves and your fans who have been there for a very bad time and, you know, have supported the last four good years as well very, very well. You owe it to them to try to just extend this as much as you can. And I know it means a lot of money. I know it means age, but the alternative is just going back to mediocrity for a long time. And I don't think fans want to see that.
Are Raptors fans content to be Grizzlies East in terms of, you know, the arc of the team? Because, I mean, I've always been a big proponent of, you know, obviously the hashtag rings culture is so prevalent right now. And it's sure. Either, you know, trust the process, win a title, or don't do anything. And it's like, guys, I don't think you understand how fun it is to watch a team that's pretty good.
But that's what like, I mean. That's what yeah. I mean. And you could have stopped your sentence with "Are Raptors fans content?" Because the answer is no. But I think there's something to be said about being competitive, having a fun team, and making it deep into the playoffs every single year. And even the ups and downs of a series like Milwaukee makes it crazy to be a fan, because you just get taken on this ride with this team. And why wouldn't you want to be part of that? Like the Grizzlies, man, like they gained so much adoration from their fans for how much they competed against San Antonio. And yeah, they're going to come back and love them next year, even if they're the sixth or seventh seed again. But the Raptors are a little better than that in the East. So why not just do it and hope for the best, and hope that maybe one year LeBron will stop playing well and you're going to have the right pieces to do it. You're never going to find that out if you don't get the pieces in there to try. So I think ring culture is so dumb, and it's a big part of Twitter, obviously, and hot take culture. I don't think you need to actually win a ring to be deemed a successful team in a successful season. Look, I think we can all say that there's probably maybe three teams in the NBA that you go into a year thinking, all right, this team can actually win, and everyone else is just kind of playing with the hopes that maybe something goes right. But, you know, why not try to take that chance and hope something goes right instead of not, right? So mm-hmm. I'm of the belief that if you have a good team and you have fun and you take your fans for a ride and you compete, it's a pretty good season. I'm not short-sighted enough to think it rings or nothing, but I know a lot of fans are, and that's what makes them fans. I think my experience as a media member makes me a little bit less short-sighted in that capacity, but I know everyone's not like that. That's why they think that if you get swept by Cleveland, who, you know, features LeBron James and happens to be defending champions, your season's a complete failure. It's not.
No.
Yeah, and yeah. We've talked about how LeBron's the X factor for the series, and I think you're right that there is something to be said for putting yourself in position to capitalize if something were to something weird were to happen. But we haven't talked about the Raptors' X factor. How many times is Drake going to show up for the series?
Oh boy. Yeah. No.
Because that could swing the series. Drake Knight's a big
could
thing.
Could it? Because Drake Knight's a big thing. Drake Knight was the only night he showed up to this year, and he didn't do anything. I was there this year. I've been to every Drake Knight. I'm a pretty big Drake stan. And this was the first year I felt like he didn't care, you know? And I was like, all right, man. All right, Drake. Like, this is what's up, okay? You're joking with Draymond. you're joking around with Draymond Green on Instagram right now, man. Like, come on, bro. Like, be the global ambassador for a 6-week period, and everyone will be happy for you. Bieber showing up to Leafs games, but Drake can't show up to Raptors games. What's going on? But I think because this is Cleveland, you'll see him. You'll see him, you know, memeing himself out in two of the four games that, you know, he shows up to, whether it's in Cleveland or not. But I think he shows up. That's my bold prediction. He shows up.
Okay. Drake is like the worst, like he's like like the Raptors sports boyfriend, and he's just like really neglectful, but also like,
But you don't want to let him go. You don't want to let him go yet because you know what happiness he can bring you, you know?
He's a heavy hitter. He's like, oh, this guy's pretty cool. Like, good times are good. Bad times are bad. I always see him with other teams. That kind of sucks. Kind of hurts my feelings.
Maybe he's recruiting Durant. Maybe he's recruiting Durant. He is, in fact, a free agent.
Maybe Durant's a free agent. Right, exactly.
poor Raptors fans. We'll find you. Oh, hey, you got the super fan that sits baseline every time. Yeah.
I've got you, man. That's
he's
my
the
guy.
Best. He's the best.
He's like your fallback boy. Like,
he's really
like,
the best.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll never let you down. When Drake may come and go, but he'll always be there.
He'll let his family down, though. He's everywhere. Man, I don't know how his family feels about him being in every single game ever, always, including Blue Jays games and Leaf games. I've never seen him. Anyway, that's a different discussion for a different day.
I think that the family has just like accepted that as the reality.
They have
like,
to have, right? They have to have, yeah.
I don't know if you heard about the guy who left his honeymoon to go to the NFL draft in Philly.
Oh, my like, goodness.
Early to go to the draft. And like, sure, yeah, that guy's a piece of crap. No way around it. But also, that guy has really set the tone for the rest of his relationship. Like,
oh,
babe,
you're
in second place forever.
That's
like,
a really
Eagles
good point.
Eagles are number one. like, I will leave the thing we'll do once to go to the NFL draft.
An event actually
happens.
Oh man, I missed that. How do people get that worked up over the draft? Like, I get maybe watching it on TV, but like to fly down honeymoon, like it's like going to a graduation when your kid isn't graduating.
Not for me, man. Like, don't care.
Like if you're at the point where you'd like to stand around like sweaty, packed in Philadelphians over like laying on a beach in Cabo, I think
with
you
your wife.
Yeah, with
your newly minted wife, you got problems, bro. You got problems, I think.
Do not care about at all.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, I think my understanding of the story was that he just left her where they were. Like, he left early, just, like hung out on the beach. I wonder if she cheated on him just in those 2 days. Well, he asked for it.
Maybe he left a note, like by the bedside, honey, I'm going to the draft.
Yeah, if that went to divorce court, I don't think a judge would rule in his favor.
I
think he still takes the L, even if she cheats on him immediately.
Unless the judge is an Eagles fan or whatever fan he was too, and you know, like there's some layers here.
Oh my God, because it'd be, you know, it'd probably be at a, like a Philadelphia municipal court.
Yeah, the World Series defense for those Always Sunny fans.
The record will reflect everything. You can stop saying that.
Oh boy. Okay, so before this goes completely off the rails, we should wrap this up with our series predictions. Faisal, as a guest, let's get yours first.
I generally hate predictions, but I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say the Cavs win this, and I'm going to say six. I'll give the Raptors 2 games, and it'll be a closer six than last year, I think, but I still say Cavs in six.
Yeah, I'm kind of of the same mindset that I think it's going to be a much closer series than the conference finals. The conference finals were, in the games the Cavs won, it was just so ridiculous.
Yeah,
like the Raptors
they
just weren't in those games.
They were cute. The Raptors did those two nice wins for their fans. But, you know, aside from that, it was pretty dominant.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a 5 or 6 game series, but I think these are going to be really competitive games.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been getting in trouble with this one, so I'm going to hedge before I say it. This could go 4, 5, or 6. It just depends on who shows up and how. But I think that I'm going to go Cavs in 4. I think they're going to get the sweep.
That's really bold.
I think they're going to get the sweep in with 3 or 4 of the games being close. Not too different from the Indy series where the Cavs, their closing lineup just has so much juice that I think when they get into crunch time, they're just going to – LeBron's going to go up a notch. I think – if the Raptors are going to steal games, they're going to have to steal them handily. I don't think that they're going to win a ton of really close games. I think they're going to win by 12, 14 points where the Cavs dug themselves in a hole and couldn't get out.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I'm more than, you know, it's not like I'm saying the Cavs are going to sweep. They're going to kill them. I just think it's going to be, I just think the Cavs will be favored in every single game. And I think that they, have a very good chance to sweep, even though the Raptors are much better this year.
Yeah, I keep my expectations low with the Cavs, especially with what we've seen lately.
I won't be crying any tears if this somehow goes seven. Actually, I will if it goes seven. But six, whatever. Like, yeah. That would be very Cavs. So it's impossible to predict. As Faisal mentioned, like predictions
always, are dumb. Yeah.
And yeah, it's there's a very real chance I could look like an idiot at the end of this, which I'm fine with.
You're going to do something to make yourself look like an idiot.
I look like an idiot clever, like 96% of the time. So really, this is more like keeping with the average.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap things up. Faisal, we really appreciate you coming on. Before we go, is there anything you'd like to plug? Anything you're excited about coming up?
Oh, no, man. I got, you know, hockey playoffs going on. If you care about, you know, hockey gifts and Raptors trolling stuff, you can follow me on Twitter at SN Faisal Kamisa. You can't spell that anyway, so maybe you guys, when you post this up, I'll just retweet it and figure it out. But no.
We'll include your handle in the tweet.
Thank you.
That
Thank you.
I recommend following Faisal. He's one of the best dressed guys in sports media. Maybe the best dressed guy in sports media.
Wow, yeah. Right. I'll take that.
I'll
throw down with anybody.
Carter, you have two pictures on your Twitter profile. Both of them are you in a checkered shirt, a different checkered shirt. You got to mix it up a little bit.
It was an enormous mistake, but I'm not proud of it. But also, I kind of like it. I think I'm going to keep it. It looks like it was like at the same event. It wasn't, but it looks like it was.
Oh, boy. Okay, so that's definitely a good place to wrap it up. So to all our listeners, thank you. Remember, you can subscribe to us on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on Stitcher, as well as follow us on Twitter. So we appreciate you guys for tuning in, all the great feedback you give us. And as always, go Cavs.